Thanks so much for listening in here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I have to tell you, I watch television sometimes with my daughter, and I can't tell you how many ads are out there now for erectile dysfunction. And it's always kind of an uncomfortable moment for me, to be perfectly honest, to be there with my 12-year-old daughter while those ads are being played. About 70%, I guess, of erectile dysfunction is caused by high blood pressure, hardening of the arteries, high cholesterol. And one of the reasons we're doing this show today is because June is Men's Health Month. And I want to talk about some of the more important issues standing in the way of men living a healthy life. Our guest, Dr. David Pallone, is an associate professor in the UW Department of Urology. His clinical specialties include erectile dysfunction, stone surgery, urologic cancer. How's your health? Do you consider going to see a doctor? For sometimes I think, I'm going to ask the doctor about this, men are more reluctant or seem to be more reluctant to go to a doctor. You can join in our conversation by calling 1-800-642-1234. You can send us an email at talk@wpr.org. You can post on our Facebook page. It's called The Larry Miller Show. Love to hear from you. And Dr. David Pallone, thank you for taking time to be with us today.
Well, thanks very much for having me. It's a pleasure to be on the show.
Well, you know, June is Men's Health Month, and what are some of the most common misconceptions men have about their health?
Well, I think a lot of men tend to be pretty stoic and think that they may be doing better than they are. But we know that men tend to live sicker and die younger than women. I think some of that is women are more involved in their own health care. They are more likely to seek care and have regular care and follow-up. So I think that's one of the big things that men need to keep in mind, is that you can't always just wait till there's a problem, because the problem may be bigger than it would have been had you been getting regular care and really going early for any concerns that you have.
Yeah, I think you're right. When they do come, what are the most common reasons men go to visit a doctor?
Well, in urology, we tend to see men for conditions that affect their quality of life. That's the things that bring them to the urologist's attention often. For example, the quality of their urinary habits. And it may not just be the man, it may be the man's partner that's bringing that to attention, because if he's getting up five times a night to urinate, whomever he may be sharing the bedroom with may be getting up five times a night too. So that's sometimes an issue that will bring men in. And then problems with erections would be a very common condition that men will come to see us about. Again, once their quality of life starts to suffer, that's when we tend to start to see men come in to see urology.
Yeah, you have seen these ads for erectile dysfunction, for example.
I mean, I can remember the time prior to 1998, before Viagra was approved, where it really wasn't talked about anywhere near to the degree that it is now. I mean, it's hard to imagine a time before seeing commercials, day and night about these medications and them even using the word, erection on TV. But since 1998, when Viagra was approved, it really has opened up a lot of awareness to just how common this condition is and the fact that we do have a lot that we can offer to help men with it.
You can join in our conversation. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org, or go ahead and post on our Facebook page. Our Facebook page title, The Larry Miller Show. We'd love to hear from you. What is the... I'm just trying to think about how often I go in to see Jim Sossman, who's my primary physician. I get at least once a year. I usually see him a couple times a year. How often should you go in for a physical?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's debatable. I mean, we used to always say, a yearly physical is a great thing, and that's what everybody should do, especially certainly after age 50, but maybe even into your late 30s or 40s. And there's been some studies that say maybe it doesn't have to be quite as rigorous, especially for younger people. But I think that there's a lot to gain from having that relationship with a primary care provider, and to have somebody, you know, really be able to look you over top to bottom once a year and find things wrong that you may not know is going on. I mean, nobody's listening to their own heart or lungs necessarily at home, and no one's checking their own blood pressure necessarily. And these are things that could be getting out of control without us necessarily having a symptom of it yet. So, I mean, I think there's, you know, a lot to be said for the yearly checkup, especially after age 50.
Yeah. Jim in Milwaukee has a question. Let's go there. Jim, hi. Thanks for calling.
Well, thanks. First-time caller. There have been so many programs when I thought about calling, but this one is near and dear to my heart because you've got an expert on ED. I was diagnosed with bladder cancer and had the arthroscopic robotic removal of the bladder and the prostate right away. They always do that, unfortunately. I'm not sure why, but anyhow, in doing that, they apparently destroyed a nerve that's responsible for causing an erection. So right now, I'm just dead below the waist, and before the operation had a very active love life, even though I'm 72 years old, and I would be able to perform again.
So what are the options? Are there options for someone in Jim's position?
Definitely. And surgery in the pelvis is one of the potential causes of erectile dysfunction. You know, men who've had their prostate removed for prostate cancer or bladder removed for bladder cancer, definitely it could lead to an injury to the nerves that control erection. So that would not be that surprising that a man who had that type of operation could have effects on their erections. But we have a number of treatment options. Pills are usually where we start. You know, things like Viagra, Cialis, Levitra, they've been around for 15, almost 20 years now. If they don't work, then there are some treatments that are a little bit less spontaneous or a little less easy to use than pills, but can be very effective also. For example, there's a medication that a man can inject into his penis whenever he wants to have an erection. It can work better than the pills in some patients. It tends to work very quickly. You know, 5 to 10 minutes after doing a self-injection, a man can have an erection. There are also external vacuum devices that can create an erection-like state by pulling blood into the penis, and then a man applies a band at the base of the penis to hold the blood in and create an erect state. And finally, for the men with the most severe problems who have tried all of these medical therapies but don't get good results, there are penile implants that we can surgically place within the penis that allow a man to have erections that way. And that will work even for men with the most severe erectile dysfunction, regardless of the cause.
So there are options out there for Jim, and do you go to see, I suppose you go to your primary doctor first for perhaps have yourself referred to a urologist?
Certainly, and many primary care providers feel very comfortable prescribing the pills for erectile dysfunction. And I think as long as a man is safe to have sexual activity, some men who have severe heart disease, they need to be evaluated and have their heart disease stabilized first before we just want to get them getting erections and attempting intercourse. Sex is a form of strenuous activity. It's not necessarily as strenuous as we'd like to think it is, but it's probably the equivalent of going up two flights of stairs. And so if a man is can't go up two flights of stairs without getting chest pain or short of breath, he may not be stable from a cardiovascular standpoint to attempt intercourse. So I think it's always important when a man is getting started on treatment for erectile dysfunction that we keep in mind that the whole man needs to be kind of viewed, not just his penis, and that we may make sure that he is healthy enough to have sexual activity. So a good rule of thumb would be two flights of stairs. If a man can do that without getting short of breath or chest pain, he probably would be able to have sexual activity without getting short of breath or chest pain or be at risk for having a heart attack.
Jim, thanks very much for calling. I appreciate your call. I want to give Jack in Cedarburg a chance to join us as well. Jack, hi. Thank you for calling.
Good morning, Larry and guests. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I got a question regarding hernia repair. I'm a healthy late 60s male, and 2.5 years ago, I had a hernia repair arthroscopically, and the healing period was very long. It was after 6 months, it became worse, and after 12 months, it settled down. And also seeing the surgeon after 6 months, or a year, he commented that there was some difficulty stapling the mesh on my right side. Well, I've continued since that 2.5 years discomfort on my right groin area. I can feel a lump in there of either a staple or some tissue around that staple, and it's evident when you do crunches, say at the gym. And post-procedure, I continue to have ED difficulties, which I never had before. And before the surgery, I've had successful experience with ED drugs, and they've now had little effect on myself post-procedure. So I am wondering if indeed there could have been some nerve entrapment at the staple site. I am considering getting a second opinion for possible surgical exploration of this, which I kind of feel that it could be an improvement, or it could be worse.
Yeah, I mean, that's not a typical surgery that would put a man at risk for problems with erections afterwards. I don't personally do hernia repairs, but it's not amongst the type of surgeries that we would typically see change in the erections. I mean, I think things that are deeper down the pelvis, again, like prostate surgery, bladder surgery, or even colon cancer operations are more prone to affect the nerves. It's difficult for me to say for sure that it could have had a direct effect on the nerves or the blood supply. I think if there's any question, there's certainly nothing wrong with getting a second opinion and having another surgeon examine you and see if there's any additional tests that they would want to do and talk to them about what your experience was with the surgery and if they have any other thoughts.
Yeah, it makes good sense to me. Good luck with that, Jack. I appreciate your call. We're talking today with Dr. David Pallone, an associate professor in the UW Department of Urology. Clinical specialties include erectile dysfunction, stone surgery, and urologic cancer. He'll be with us till 12:30. We'll take a quick look at the news and weather, and then we'll be back with our doctor. Stay with us. Thanks so much for joining us on the Ideas Network. If you're waking up and making multiple trips to the bathroom at night, could be a sign of an enlarged prostate. It might be, could be diabetes. It could be anxiety, maybe a neurological disorder. Sometimes men have a hard time going to see a doctor, especially if you don't think anything's wrong or maybe it's not a medical emergency. I tell you what, Dr. David Pallone is an associate professor. He's our guest today. He's in the Department of Urology. Clinically, specializes in erectile dysfunction, stone surgery, urologic cancer. When was the last time you visited the doctor's office just for a routine checkup? When you're in pain, do you go to a doctor or you wait until it's over? We'll answer those questions and a whole lot more with Dr. David Pallone. Join in with your questions at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page, The Larry Miller Show. Love to hear from you. And again, Dr. Pallone, thanks for joining us today. Appreciate it very much.
You're welcome. My pleasure.
We had Amanda from Madison called in to ask if Prozac and other antidepressants can cause low testosterone and other maybe erectile dysfunction issues.
Yeah, so antidepressants don't typically affect the testosterone level for a man, but they can certainly affect his erections. It can be a challenge because depression itself can cause trouble with erections. So, our goal in treating depression is to make the man feel better, and that will often help the erections. But unfortunately, the medications to treat the depression as a side effect could affect the erection. So it's really walking a fine line to make the depression better with the meds while not creating erectile dysfunction with those same meds.
Let's turn to prostate issues. What about prostate exams? How often should men get these checked out?
That's in evolution. I think there's various opinions amongst different medical organizations about the utility of prostate cancer screening. The American Urological Association, the group that represents urologists, our recommendations are that for the average man, a man who doesn't have a strong family history of prostate cancer, he probably should have his prostate checked every 1 to 2 years from age 55 to 69. And in conjunction with the prostate exam, a blood test called PSA should be at least be discussed whether or not to get it. It can be a way of detecting prostate cancer earlier than relying on either symptoms or the rectal exam.
I have a family history of that, so I wondered about a genetic component to it. With a brother and a couple of brothers and a father with it kinds of issues.
Yeah, it could certainly increase a man's risk of having prostate cancer himself if he has several first-degree male relatives who've had it, especially if they've had it at a younger age or if it's been a more aggressive type of prostate cancer. Prostate cancer is extremely common, and virtually every man will have some prostate cancer if he lives long enough. When a man tells me that his 85-year-old grandfather was diagnosed with prostate cancer, I don't necessarily take that to mean that he is going to have a greater risk himself. But when a man tells me that his father died from prostate cancer at age 55, that's something that tells me that I need to really screen that man aggressively and keep a very close eye on him, because he's certainly going to be at higher risk for having prostate cancer and maybe even an aggressive variety like his father had.
How do you tell if there's something wrong with your prostate? Is it the number of times you have to go to the bathroom, for example?
That could be a sign of a prostate problem or a bladder problem. So urinary frequency is something to pay attention to. Urinary urgency, or the sudden need to go to the bathroom in a hurry, could be a sign of a problem. A slowing of the urinary stream, difficulty emptying the bladder. These are all signs potentially of obstruction of the urethra by a large prostate. Blood in the urine is something that's very important to report to a physician. That could be a sign of bladder cancer or other urinary tract cancer. So that's one of the things that, as a symptom in the urination, we take most seriously would be blood in the urine.
And before we go back to the phones here, what about high blood pressure? I mentioned that earlier. Or high cholesterol, I mentioned that as well. What are the effects of someone having high blood pressure or high cholesterol?
Well, certainly on the erections, those are going to have a very significant impact. Erectile dysfunction is very similar in its risk profile to coronary artery disease or the risk for heart attack. It's the same kind of risk factors that play in both conditions. And erectile dysfunction tends to occur earlier than men having heart attacks, probably because the arteries that supply the penis are smaller and more delicate than the arteries that supply the heart. So when a man is having problems with his erections, it could certainly be a sign that he's got high blood pressure, high cholesterol, diabetes, other risk factors for coronary artery disease, and that erectile dysfunction is a warning sign that not only is he having problems with erections, but he might be at risk for having a heart attack down the road. In fact, on average, erectile dysfunction will present 3 years earlier than a man starting to have problems with heart attack or angina, chest pain with exertion.
Let's take another call. Linda in Bayfield, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi. My father has BPH, has had it for years, has to, I can't remember the name of the, catheterize himself daily. Mm-hmm. Sometimes. More than once a day. And so I'm wondering about the latest, if there have been any advancements in treatment or surgery to correct that problem.
Okay, what is BPH?
Yeah, so BPH stands for benign prostatic hyperplasia. So it's an enlargement of the prostate. Basically, the prostate gland, just beginning around age 50 on average men, starts to get larger. We don't know why, and we know that is a very consistent finding in all men beginning around age 50, and it continues for the rest of a man's life. We know how it happens. We just don't know why. And so as the prostate grows, in many men, it will create urinary symptoms. And if it gets large enough and obstructs enough, it can make it impossible for a man to actually expel his urine. So some men do need to have a catheter to get the urine out mechanically. So there are a number of different treatments, both medical and surgical, for that BPH or prostate enlargement. Usually we start with the medications to shrink the prostate, but some men the symptoms are severe enough that they need to move on to surgery. There are a number of different surgical approaches. It's rare these days to have to make an incision to actually remove the obstructing part of the prostate. So usually surgeries are done using a scope that goes through the urethra. We use some kind of a technology, either a laser or a resection or vaporization, to get rid of the obstructing tissue that's causing the blockage.
Interesting. Linda, I hope that helps.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot for calling. Appreciate your call. Jeff emailed to ask if you could speak about Peyronie's disease and options for dealing with it.
Certainly. So Peyronie's disease is a urological condition that I actually specialize in seeing. It's a condition that's less talked about than erectile dysfunction. So Peyronie's disease is a condition where a man has scar tissue on the lining of his erectile chamber in his penis. And what it does is it can make the penis curve when he has an erection. And that can create some mechanical difficulties with having intercourse. The curve can be very severe. I mean, even a 90-degree bend in the penis with an erection that impairs his ability to have normal intercourse. We don't know why some men get it. The theory is that trauma to the penis somehow induces this scar tissue to form. About 9% of men, we think, actually have this condition, this Peyronie's disease, to some degree. Now, some men have very mild forms of it, may have just a very mild curvature with erections, whereas, again, other men could have a 90-degree bend or worse. So there are no good oral therapies that work for it, unfortunately. So any kind of treatment is either a surgical approach to place some sutures to help bend the penis straight when he gets an erection, or we rarely will actually cut out the scar tissue and replace it with a graft, and that will allow the penis to straighten. There's also a new FDA-approved treatment that is an injection that can help straighten the penis. So it's basically an enzyme that breaks down scar tissue that can be injected into the scar tissue that's causing the curve, and over a series of injections over several months, that may weaken the scar tissue enough that the penis begins to straighten. So that's one of the more common treatments that we start with for this Peyronie's disease. But ultimately, some men do require surgery in order to get their penis more functional.
Let's turn to Pete in La Crosse next. Hi, Pete. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Larry and Doctor. I'm calling with a funny story that has a favorable ending. It goes like this. This past winter, I was suffering from painful urination and had to wake up many times during the night at the worst point of it. But then we had this big snow event here, and I ran out of my favorite Diet Cola. And in the course of a couple of days, the symptoms got a lot better until the roads improved, and I went out and got more Diet Cola, and the symptoms got worse again. And long story short was I cycled on and off this cola two or three times, and that was it. That was what was causing all this inflammation and pain. I think it's pretty weird.
Wow.
Yeah, I mean, behavioral strategies are very important in addressing urinary symptoms. Some individuals will urinate frequently simply because they're drinking too much fluid. And so what we often will do is have a patient do what we call a voiding diary, which is recording on a sheet of paper every time they take something to drink, and how much they drink, and what they drink. And then also every time someone goes to the bathroom, recording when that happens, and then how much they go. And if you add it all up, you can see some patients are simply urinating too much because they're either drinking too much fluid or they're drinking the wrong kinds of fluid. There is definitely an association between caffeinated and carbonated beverages on urinary frequency. Mm-hmm. So one of the things I tell all my patients, men and women, who come in with urinary symptoms is to minimize or cut out completely coffee, tea, soda pop, alcohol, in order to help reduce their frequency. May not, you know, fix the problem entirely, especially if they do have a large prostate, but it can certainly help. Minimizing fluid in the evening also can help reduce the number of times somebody gets up at night. So I generally say for the 3 hours before going to bed, try to cut out all fluids. So that way you'll make less urine overnight, be less likely to have to wake up overnight to go to the bathroom.
Thanks for that call, Pete. The kind of the flip side is if you still need to take in fluids.
Exactly. We want you to be hydrated, but I always tell patients from the time you wake up in the morning till around dinner time, say 6 p.m., that's when you should get all your fluids for the day. And then after 6 p.m., really try to minimize your fluids so you'll be making less urine at night, less likely to wake up, and certainly avoid the carbonated and caffeinated beverages and alcoholic beverages in the evening after 6 p.m.
Let's turn to Stefan in Eau Claire next. Thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I was wondering if the doctor would know how to treat a cyst. I don't think that's quite the right word. In the scrotum, between, you know, right above the testicle, and it can be drained, can be rather than removed. I'm just wondering if there have been problems of letting those things just be. I don't have any real problems with that. I'm just concerned about something developing that nobody has mentioned yet.
Mm-hmm. Certainly. So what it sounds like you're describing would either be something called a spermatocele, which is a cyst of fluid that sits usually on top of the testicle within the scrotum, or a hydrocele, which is some fluid surrounding the entire testicle within the scrotum. And these are conditions that do not necessarily need treatment unless they're really bothersome. These are not tumors, and it's very important that if a man feels something in his scrotum, that he has his physician look at it, examine it, perhaps do an ultrasound of the scrotum to clarify whether the finding is solid or a fluid-filled cyst. If it's a fluid-filled cyst, then it's usually a spermatocele or a hydrocele. And if it's large enough that it's bothersome, while they can be drained by simply numbing the skin and passing a needle to it and sucking out the fluid, that usually doesn't fix the problem completely. The cyst usually fills back up with fluid. So we do surgery sometime in the scrotum to excise these cysts that are filled with fluid if they've gotten large and bothersome. But the main thing is for a man to make sure that it is just a cyst and it's not a solid tumor, especially if a man feels a solid lump or bump in his testicle itself. That's got to be considered testicular cancer until proven otherwise. So if a man does feel something different in his scrotum, he should go to his doctor right away to have that examined and perhaps get an ultrasound to evaluate it further.
There we go. Thanks, Stefan, for calling. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. Email at talk@wpr.org. Angie from Fond du Lac emailed to say, I'll bet you've heard this a few times, her husband avoids visiting the doctor. Any tips for getting him to go?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, like I said earlier, men tend to be stoic, and we think about, you know, Gary Cooper, John Wayne, Clint Eastwood. These are not guys that in their movies you see going to the doctor. They're out on the frontier. But, you know, I think making a man realize that he's loved by his family members and that he's important to his family to be there for them, I think would be the strategy to use. That, you know, that if a man wants to be there for his family, then part of that is being healthy and being around for as long as possible for his family. And I think that's, you know, the way to motivate a man is that if he really cares and loves his family, then that's a reason to seek prompt medical attention for concerns and to have regular checkups so that he can be around for as long as possible.
Yeah, I think that's probably a very good approach. We talked about high blood pressure. What typically causes high blood pressure?
For most individuals, there isn't a specific cause. It's just what we call essential hypertension, meaning it develops. It's just something we see typically as people get older. Now, there are some things that can cause high blood pressure. Certain tumors can do it. So that's one thing we always look for. Certain vascular problems, like narrowing of the arteries that go to the kidney, can cause blood pressure. But for the vast majority of individuals, It's just something that happens and needs to be treated to keep it under control to prevent a number of medical consequences that can occur from the high blood pressure.
And there are some pretty good, you know, there are some pretty good ways, I think, medically to lower blood pressure.
Yeah, definitely. There are dietary and behavioral strategies, but then medications can be very effective, and there are a wide variety of different types of medications that can be used to control the blood pressure and prevent some of the consequences that can occur from out of control blood pressure, like heart disease, kidney damage, and erectile dysfunction.
Let's turn to Roger in Portage next. Roger, thank you for calling. Hello.
Yeah, hi, Larry. I've got all the usual symptoms. At 72, I'm not dead yet. I've got a prostate the size of a glazed donut. I can get an erection. It's not a real good erection like it was when I was 21 in blue steel, but maintaining the erection is an issue. I stopped at a fun store in the interstate, and they sell all kinds of little devices, but it looked to me like the gel sleeve was more for your own pleasure, not to maintain an erection. Are there any prosthetic devices that one could slip over your erect penis to maintain an erection during intercourse?
Yeah, so there are some men whose erectile dysfunction is exactly what you're describing, which is the difficulty maintaining it. So they can actually get the erection, but it's just the difficulties holding it. So there are some constriction bands that could be applied to the base of the penis to help maintain the erection after it's been achieved. And actually, that's part of this vacuum erection device that I was describing earlier, which is a device that will pull the blood into the penis, and then a band is applied to the base of the penis that's tight that will hold the blood in. So something like that, it can be very helpful for men who are having trouble maintaining it. So they may have something like that at the type of establishment that you went to. Also, there is one that can be obtained through a pharmacy. It's called the Actis Ring, ACTIS. It's a constriction band that's applied to the base of the penis to help hold the blood in.
Wonderful.
All right. Thanks, Roger. And Karen in Appleton, thank you for calling. Hi.
Hi. My husband had prostate cancer about 8 years ago, had the prostate removed, and ever since not only has problems with getting and maintaining an erection, but leaks urine.
Mm.
And so he's been trying to explore options that can help him. He is incontinent of urine even when he doesn't have an erection.
Okay.
Yeah, that's unfortunately one of the potential risks also of prostate cancer surgery is a loss of urinary control. So those are the two quality of life conditions that really unfortunately can occur with prostate cancer surgery: problems with erections, problems with urinary control. So there are options that can help with the urinary control after a prostate removal surgery. So there are certain exercises to help strengthen the pelvic floor that may help. There are what are called sling procedures, which are procedures where this synthetic mesh is placed surgically across the urethra underneath where a man sits to help tighten the urethra, and that can help to reduce leakage. For men with the most severe leakage, though, there is a prosthetic device called an artificial urinary sphincter that can allow him to achieve dryness. It's reserved usually for men who have the most severe leakage because it is a surgical procedure to implant this device, and it's something that can have some risks and complications. But for men who are really bothered and wearing multiple pads or even diapers each day because of their leakage, an artificial urinary sphincter can really make a huge difference and improve their quality of life, because a man can go from wearing three or four diapers a day to being completely dry if he has one of these devices surgically implanted. So it's really kind of a graduated approach, depending on the severity of the leakage, but it may go up to and include a surgery to place this artificial urinary sphincter.
Thank you for that question, Karen. And Dr. Pallone, thank you for calling. Would you come back and be with us again? We have lots of questions that we still haven't answered. I hope you'll join us again.
I would love to. It'd be my pleasure.
Dr. David Pallone, Associate Professor in the UW Department of Urology, our guest today. We'll have him back and we'll do this again. Appreciate all the calls, and thank you so much for listening. Please stay with us. Lots more in store on the Ideas Network.